Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yikes. It's like the Eye of Sauron.
So are you a Lord of the Rings fan?
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, me too.
You know, when all those movies were coming out, there was a really good friend of mine and his wife was working on, she worked like in the publicity department or something.
Yeah.
And she used to get like our whole posse, we'd get invited to the press shows. So like, it would always be in like the nicest, biggest theater in New York. And there'd be like literally like 15 press people there. And then like 30 of like all of us like friends and like this free popcorn.
Nice.
And we'd get to see the movie like the week before it came out. But like it's also gangster. Like in the nicest theater with just like our team and like free snacks.
Did you dress up as Gandalf or anything?
No.
No wizard costumes? No?
Wasn't necessary.
Yeah. Well, speaking of movies, I was just like, you know, I was waiting for you to come on. And I'm like, oh, you know, let's hit Wikipedia just to get the brain moving, you know? So you read a couple things.
Right.
And on this day in 1972 is when the Uruguayan Air Force Flight 571 crashed into the Andes, and they didn't find the guys until 2 months later, which I'm pretty sure is what that movie Alive was made after, when they started eating each other's frozen bodies up in the Andes. Pretty crazy.
Dude, that is such a rando, like, fucking thing to come up with, Benny.
That movie fucked me up. Cannibals came up the other day. My children, I don't know where they said, but they're like, we're going to cut our dad's head off. I'm like, all right, you know, like, if that's how you want to play it. And I was like, you know, we said something about eating me. And I was like, oh, you guys are cannibals, huh? And I had to explain what a cannibal was. And I said, nah, they don't exist in the world. It's just like a made up thing, like monsters. And I'm like, wait, is cannibalism still going on somewhere in the world right now? Like, or is it totally like infanticide, like something that was widely known throughout the world like 500 years ago is kind of like mostly gone? Is cannibalism like mostly gone?
I think it's supposed to be gone, but
yeah,
you never know, dude. I mean, it's
got to be some pockets.
There's some buried, you know, buried tribes out there that nobody, they're not, you know, they're not being watched over. So who knows?
Even beyond tribes, like there's even like parts of America where, like, the cops and normal people don't really go back there, you know, like weird parts of the woods and desert and stuff that people don't really, like, go. Like, maybe, like, someone dies and they're like, shit, we had a bad, like, crop season. Like, we might as well, like, fuck with a leg or something. I don't know. This is what I think about all the time with history, Brad, is the types of things that we're learning about in the last, like, 50 years when phones and worldwide communication was possible. And people like hate globalism in that way. But the one thing I think about is that like nobody can go unchecked anymore. You know, like there's no like society in the world that can be like, you know what? We need crops. We had a bad rain season. We need to kill 150 babies. and roll them off this staircase, right. Which like used to happen all the time in the world because there were just these like pockets of civilization that just convinced themselves of all this crazy shit, just being like drunk and bored in the middle of nowhere for 100 years and convince themselves that you got to slaughter, you know, babies to grow crops the next year. And no one was around, like, you know, reading it on their phones, being like, oh no, like you shouldn't do that. And then generations of people were raised to believe that you needed to slaughter babies to grow corn. So this is kind of what I'm into, like globalism, you know.
I'm Benny. Is your new house like on an Indian burial ground or something? I'm like,
I mean, there's actually a pretty good chance of that. You know why it's called the Delaware River? Is the Delaware Indians, right. You know? Well, yeah. I mean, there's depth to the forest. God knows what happened here. I don't know. Fucking God knows what George Washington and his friends did around here. Could have been crazy.
Cannibalism.
So do you think I'm feeling something like that?
I don't know, dude. You're taking this on a pretty bizarre tangent.
This is going off track, isn't it?
Touche.
Isn't this our program?
Touche, senor.
Isn't this our program? I think Jenny would be into it.
Oh, fuck yeah.
She was fun. What a fun interview. Yes. That wasn't even an interview. That was just like a fun hang. It's I felt like we could have been on the phone for like another hour, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that
She's
was good.
Awesome. She's awesome.
She would definitely be into this conversation, I'm sure.
But we learned a lot. We learned a lot about baking. We learned a lot about guitar, about sculpture.
Yeah,
All sorts of stuff. A lot about Bad Cop, way the lyrics are written. I don't know. It was a cool interview. I had a lot of fun with her.
She's a person of many talents. I like that.
Yeah. And I really was like, went onto her website. You know, I don't know. I think one cool thing about Jenny is like, I meet a lot of musicians who are like, oh yeah, I'm a musician, but I also do this and this. Like, sort of presents herself equally as an artist and as a, you know, a speaker and all these things, like as well as a musician. It's not like this sole preoccupation to her life, you know? Right. And we even found some common ground there on not really missing playing shows that much. So I feel like a dick saying, because I see these people tweeting every day and shit, like with this utter desperation.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, I've been playing like probably like at least a show a week on average,
yeah,
since I was like 12 years old, you know,
that's got gray hairs. Dude. Yeah. It's you like, need to take it's a like, break.
It's like I said in the interview, I mean, I desperately miss sitting in a room with people and playing loud music and creating a song and finishing a song and doing things, you know, that stuff. That's like an innate thing that you can't get rid of. But yeah, I don't know. Shows? Eh, it's getting annoying.
At some point, you'll miss them.
No, I'm starting to already.
Yeah, I bet.
I definitely am. You know, it's that physical thing. I think we talked about it in the interview with the guy from Clutch. It's like, you know, I don't know, carrying drums around sucks.
Right.
It's just annoying. It just gets annoying. Maybe it's like the sheer fact that I like just don't have to do that for a little while. That's kind of nice, you know?
It is. There is a lot of annoying and just pain in the ass shit to being doing shows, touring. It's almost like doing a one-off is more of a pain in the ass than being on the road, because you're going to do the rhythm at least on the road, right?
Way worse.
Yeah.
I find it so much more jarring. You know, it's like you're going for tour. It's like you're just mixing up your life.
Yeah, yeah.
You're taking all your shit. You're packing it to go. Yeah, like you said, within, you know, 4 or 5 days, like, Your packing is all set.
Right.
Your unpacking is set. People's roles are being defined. How you're setting up your kit, at what time, the schedule of your day. And then, yeah, before you know it, it's like, it's insanity, but it's clockwork. It's like
it
something you can count on.
Yeah.
And then when you're, you know, basically like, you know, as a drummer, and especially in the situation I've been in the last few years, with not only having to transport drums, but having to transport drums that don't even live at my house, is like to play one show, especially a couple hours away or something, you know, you sit back and you go, holy shit, I just spent like 36 hours to play a 30-minute show. You know what I mean? Right. You start like weighing like the time. This is like, I wish I could go play another show.
Right.
Then this would make all this fucking worth it. Well, now I got to go right back into the practice space I was nice and settled in and do that again. Yeah, it's a lot, man.
And then half the time you don't even get to revel in it. Like, you usually have to pack up after the show.
Oh,
like,
you're done. Like, what, are you spending the night in Boston?
Right, no, exactly.
I'm driving back. You're going to show up at this practice space at 4:30 in the morning with all these drums and walk home. And then you lose another day. It's like when you take ecstasy. You know what I mean? Like, the high is not the full thing. You're high for a long time, but then you can't do anything else for like 12 hours after. So you have to equate that time into your drug use. You know, if you're going to drive me home from Boston and make me load out at 4:30 in the morning, I need like another half a day to recover. Yeah.
Another day, dude.
If you want me to be, I don't have a day. I don't have a day. I got kids.
Oh, wow.
It was easier. It was easier when I left nothing I cared about.
Yeah.
And everything I cared about was out there. Right. You know?
Right.
Definitely changes it. Wow. I'm on a lot of maybe it's because you caught me at Scotch O'Clock
tonight. Oh, yeah, baby. Look at that. That's a big glass of scotch, Benny.
I was just saying that in my episode of the tune-up, we were joking about that guy Travis Scott, that pop star, is doing a collaboration with McDonald's where you go in and you get like the Travis Scott meal and like exclusive merchandise as part of it. And then that guy Jay Balvin's got one coming up where you order fucking two burgers and like an Oreo McFlurry, and apparently it's his meal. But he asked me what companies I would you know, shill for.
Right, right.
And I was like, there's a couple single malt companies.
Hell yeah.
That could get me to be. And I said I would do it like Bill Murray in Lost in Translation, like it's Suntory time.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe get like a velvet smoking jacket, an ascot, like try to do it classy.
You'd look good in that outfit, dude.
Thank you. I think so, too. I think so, too. I don't know. Let's listen to this great interview. I'm going to just go crazy if we keep talking.
Yeah.
It's going off track! It's going well.
Look good.
My health check passed.
Barely.
I know. Quarantine hasn't been good for me with that.
No?
Nah. Well, at first, it was rad because I thought like my first instinct was like, oh no, I'm going to be home like all the time. I'm going to kind of like eat like shit, maybe like stress eat or something. But I kind of had like a reverse survival reaction where in one fail swoop, I stopped eating out altogether, which is kind of a bad habit of mine. And then also I'm pretty paranoid. I have kids and stuff. So I was like, I was not about going to the market. I didn't know if markets were going to be bare. We're going to have like 28 days later kind of shit going on. So late at night, if I had like, I was like, oh, I could go for a bowl of cereal, you know? and then I was like, wait, that's one less morning meal for the kids.
Whoa.
And one day, you know what I mean? Like I was getting in that kind of mindset. So at first, that was counterbalancing how much scotch I was drinking at night.
So you're on sort of a cleanse.
Yeah. But then I got used to it like everyone else, you know, slipping the bad habits again. I'm like, oh, Dunkin' Donuts is probably safe. and now that, but the scotch is still going on with the food. So, you know, I'm a little weighty right now. There's like only like a few t-shirts I feel comfortable in right now. A lot of my like old regulars aren't feeling so good, and I need to like work my way back into them.
You'll get there.
Thanks.
I did the opposite. It was like I started this thing and was like, fuck yeah, snacks and cookies. And then it was like, what are we doing here? Like, you know what I mean? If I'm eating a cookie like three times a day, what the fuck am I doing here? This is no longer a treat. It's just what I do. And then it was like, then I was like, well, you got a bunch of free time, so you might as well go outside because everything's closed and like, yeah. So that was, it was good. I'm glad it was the opposite for me because I'm sort of like prone to, fluctuations in body type.
I hear it. I'm like week to week. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you legitimately bake though, right? Like you're a real baker.
I do. And the thing about that is that it's like, it's this innocuous sugar consumption thing because it's like, because if I'm baking, I'm like, oh, it's around all the time. So I don't need to like eat cake or like something that I made. But then there is like a little bit of like, oh, this broke. I'll just take a bite. You know what I mean? Or like, and then it's like, why are you you know what this tastes like already. And then I was right before the pandemic started, I was working at this bakery like all the time and was like, yeah, I don't really eat the stuff there. And then I thought about it later after I like left that place and was like, whoa, sugar is crazy for you. It turns out, you know what I mean? Like my body kind of normalized from being away from it. And I was like, wow, you were really just kind of sampling a lot of this.
But you kind of have to, right? Like how you can't trust like a sober bartender. Like you need to like taste the product, right? When you're cooking it.
Well, yes and no. I mean, if I'm making a new recipe, I have to taste it. But if it's the same buttercream recipe I've been using for 3 years, there's really no reason that I should be tasting it. Unless it like smells off, you know?
And baking's a lot more about that like precision measurement kind of stuff, right? More than
it's measured.
Dabble with, like you're not like making a sauce.
No. Yeah. There's no, the tomato doesn't dictate how it's going to turn.
So you were working at a bakery. What's that like? Is you got to wake up super early? That kind of vibe, or is it more like decorative cake kind of stuff?
Well, good for you for knowing the difference between the two. And I was working at kind of the second. I mean, I did get up early, but it wasn't like people that I know. They're like, I'm up at 3:30.
I spent a two week run when I was 17 as a bagel baker.
There
actually,
you go.
Probably closer to about a month. So I learned the hard way about what it takes to get fresh bread in people's mouths by like 6 a.m.
Yeah. That's like the crazy sick thing about that is that like the breakfast carbs are only good that day. And some poor person gets up at 3:30 to do that for you. And then tomorrow they're significantly discounted, you know?
Yeah. And at that point in my life, it wasn't getting up. It was just we're pushing through,
yeah.
You know? I was just like, it's already like one and I'm out with my friends. I'm like, one more beer, then a Mountain Dew, then I'll go to work. It's amazing I'm alive, you know?
That just takes me back to being a young person with a job where you're like, I figured it out. I just won't go to bed. I'll be great at my job, but I'll show up really sweaty and like looking like a glazed donut and people are going to trust me with their food. No, it wasn't like that. It was cakes. It was like a lot of, which is like, I would get all these like intense customers that are like, they think they're asking the right questions, but it's like they don't know what they're talking about. And they kind of like bully you into being like, is the cake fresh? When are you baking the cake? If it's for Saturday, it's like, well, honestly, I'm probably baking it on Thursday. Like, you know, I'm not going to tell you that because you don't understand why, but like it's sealed in butter. That's
what is the reason? You know? What is the reason why?
Because on those like baking shows where like Nailed It, where they're like, look at these clowns that don't know what they're doing. They're kind of like tricking them because you only have 45 minutes and you have to bake and frost something. Like that's not possible. You can't.
That's not reality.
Yeah. You have to let something cool and it's better if it cools naturally than like if you throw it in the freezer. And then, you know what I mean? And it needs to be kind of room temperature before you can frost it. Otherwise, you're going to get yourself into other problems. Like if you frost a very cold cake, it will sweat. The frosting will like, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of like waiting for things to be.
And if it's a little too warm, what, it'll break apart?
Oh, it'll just melt off. It's like.
Yeah.
So.
I don't think about this stuff.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, this is frosting was invented as like a way to seal up a baked good and make it last longer. And then
really?
Wow. What's like the first like known instance of frosting like in the world?
I don't know, but that's a good question. And probably it wasn't very good. You know what I mean?
Right, it's like, right.
Did you guys ever, I think it's a Bill Bryson book called like At Home or something. It's like the history of life in a home.
Okay.
And like, and all this stuff, like everything, like religion, like patriarchy, where we're like, it's just always been like that. It's like, no, it hasn't. It's only been like that for like 100 years. Right. And then 100 years before that, it was completely fucking different. And like, he gets into like a lot of cooking, and that was pretty.
I didn't know that about the icing, but I did know that like fish and chips, that the breading was originally, that was the same reason, was to keep the moisture in, and that people didn't eat the breading.
I didn't know that, but I did know that that's the logic of a pasty. Those like delicious handheld pot pies was like, it's like a minor food. So then you have your like coal miner hands and you just like don't eat the breading. You know, only eat the middle, but the breading is delicious.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's like my favorite part. But maybe it used to be like, we're probably, you know, making it seem better than it was because we've had like, oh, go to the pasty shop in England, you know, and that bread's like covered in like butter and egg mixture and all this. Who knows the kind of like rock hard, you know, minor bread that like all the meat was stuffed in, you know?
Oh my God. Did you guys see Sweeney Todd? The one with
A long time ago. That was the musical, right?
I think so. I remember the movie with like, I think it was like Johnny Depp and Joanna Lumley, but like those pies were, I mean, obviously they're full of people, but they were so gross looking. I was like, oh shit, this is what food looked like.
It served, I guess you forget that it served a much more like utilitarian purpose not that long ago. You know, people like, even my grandfather, his family would, you know, take bones from the animal and make soups and like, that didn't happen that long ago.
No, I love like, I mean, it's a weird thing in our culture where people have decided only to use like the driest, most flavorless part of the meat.
Right.
And then everything else is deemed like scrap meat. But it's like, you idiots, that's the good stuff.
Yeah. Scrapple's delicious. I wish it wasn't. That's coming from a long time vegetarian, but it's still good. It's still really good. I remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, so when you worked at that place, were you doing really like elaborate, like wedding cakes, and were you getting to use your artistic side more, as much as your baking side?
Yeah. Well, my baking side was like just a experimental home baking.
Okay.
Which I always like enjoyed that, but I think the only reason I was any good at it is because it is kind of like a 3D medium. Like, you know what I mean? I just wanted to make something that looked, I remember I would make like, you know, like boob cakes or like, you know, a cake that looks like a pile of dog shit for like my friends in high school. And like, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing, but then I kind of stumbled into this job as like a part-time cookie decorator and then wound up being the only baker there for a while. And then, it's like a very cute place with like a lot of rainbows and unicorns and stuff, which is like an aesthetic that I am really comfortable with. and so I just started making things look crazy and cute. And then that became kind of like, people would be like, yeah, I want that. You know, also Pinterest drives a lot of baking industry stuff. And there's like this popular formula for a unicorn cake where you like stick a horn in the top of a round cake and put some eyes on it. And for some reason, it's like very, very, very popular, even though it doesn't really look like a unicorn. So I did a lot of those. But I also did some crazy stuff. It was fun.
And people make those funny videos. My wife just showed me that the other day. It was like, I had no idea this scene existed with like at-home chefs who post these videos of like the ingredients of their like, you know, yogurt and granola breakfast to this like hit music wherever they are. These like weird, like, you know,
chia seeds and honey, you know, like listing the bowl of food to this, like, you know, hip LA music.
I don't know about this.
It's
but
like widely popular. It's the corniest fucking thing I've ever seen. Like, I couldn't imagine in any context. I told her that if she wanted to make those videos, I would like set myself in the back, like with a sleeveless shirt and like a cheesy gordita crunch. And just like right. totally blow up your spot.
That would be a really good spoof, I think.
Like, I'm like, you want to go viral.
You know? You need my help.
It is kind of like sculpture, isn't it? Because I see on those cooking shows that they're using like sculpting tools, the same you would, you know, sculpting clay or something, right?
Yeah, and there's like fondant is a little bit like Play-Doh. I don't really work with it, but
I have a major problem with the fondant.
It's disgusting.
What is it, Brad?
Fondant is like what's on wedding cakes, and it tastes like shit. And
it's awful.
You watch all those cooking shows and they make all this incredible stuff, but they're making it out of inedible. They might as well be using clay. So
I feel exactly the same way about it.
Good.
I use buttercream frosting and like cookies too. And sometimes like a Rice Krispie inside and then you put frosting on the outside. So it's all delicious and edible.
That's how it should be.
Yeah, I'm like, fondant is like
it's cheating.
About as edible as like whatever yoga mat shit they were putting in Subway bread. Like, technically.
What is it? Like, what's actually in it?
I think it's like a marshmallow that's been reduced, but I've never made it because it's vile and I don't believe
it. But you know what it is, right, Benny? It's like on wedding cakes. It's like that dense kind of like clay. It's not very sweet.
Yeah, it looks like the linoleum wrap, like what you would wrap drums in.
It's pretty similar. It's a related product. Yeah,
it tastes bad. Wedding cakes are bad. Yeah, usually
they are bad.
You might as well toss like just toss a fucking Entenmann's box on each table. And people will be so totally much happier.
Stoked. Yeah.
You know, it's really hard. And you got to be lucky. Like, if you actually get like a fun part of the top, it's usually bullshit slice, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not into it.
No, I'm very like, very excited to see a cake at any party with a cake and also to try it. And a lot of times I'm kind of bummed and disappointed. Like, why is this not good? There's no real reason for that, you know?
What's your go-to? Like, say you're having company and you don't have, like, a lot of time and you just need to go to, like, your old industry standard that you know is, like, dope and you can do blindfolded. Like, what is it?
Well, if I have company over, what I do, I usually make and have around, like cookie dough, like, already measured out in the freezer into, like, little balls.
Okay.
So that's like a good fast trick.
Just ready to go,
In like, and then the house smells good, and everyone's like, "Wow, you just made these!" And it's like, "Well, I just baked them. I made them like a couple weeks ago." But like, so that's a good one. And then also, I feel like it's less intimidating. Sometimes people are like if I were to put out a cake, I think people would be like, "Oh God, what?" You know. This is too much. Unless there's like an occasion, you know?
Like they'd feel like underdressed, like they're at a cotillion or something.
You should have put on pants with a waistband. I didn't know we were having cake.
It does feel formal, like you're too having much. Many courses or something.
But that would be pretty funny to just spring on somebody without any really necessary context for it. Of like a tiered cake on like a Tuesday. We're eating tacos.
Definitely got like the closest I've ever come is just getting really stoned and taking my dog for a walk and then showing back up to my house with an ice cream cake. That has happened a couple times. This is one really good place with a walk up window, you know? Sometimes you just got to live a little.
You do.
I love me some ice cream cake. If I had a fucking place that had good ice cream cake nearby, I'd be in big trouble.
You know what? Fairly recently, someone served me an ice cream cake. And it was for like a celebration of mine, too. And it didn't have the chocolate crunchies in it. And I was like, what the fuck is this? I couldn't say anything because people were being really nice. But it was like, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? You know, yeah. This is like giving me like a mixed vegetable pizza or just like something stupid. Like you're ruining like the best basic combination of flavors with all these extras, you know?
What are the chocolate crunchies? Like chocolate chips in the ice cream?
Yeah, like those little hard chocolate crunchies that run in the middle of an ice cream cake.
So
normally between like the chocolate and vanilla layer, maybe.
But do you have cake in your cake? Because I'm talking about ice cream cake with actual cake in it.
Oh, that's dope too.
You're talking about like a Carvel.
That's some junior shit. Yeah.
You're talking about a Carvel.
I am kind of talking about Carvel. Yeah.
I've never seen one of those in real life. It's just ice cream shaped like a cake.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But with crunchies in the middle. That's a Carvel cake.
Yeah, like
cake.
Crunchies in the middle.
What are the crunchies? Okay.
I didn't realize this was like sort of a pedestrian. Is this a pedestrian thing?
No, Carvel is East Coast though, dude.
Oh, yeah. Man. I know. Right. I've heard of it. Is that Fudgy the Whale?
Yeah,
is he a Carvel cake?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Fudgy the Whale. And Cookie Puss.
Yeah,
Cookie Puss is from there too. Yeah. It's really good. And now that my palate's a little more refined, I'd stay away from their hard ice cream. But I'll take a nice soft from Carvel, like a nice dip with some sprinkles. All right, we got to shift this interview because I'm starving. Now I have a sweet tooth. I don't want to talk. Let's talk about guitars.
Okay.
Because those are cool. So I saw some background on you when you were like a little older, you know, kind of going from the Midwest to the West Coast, but I didn't really see like what your entrance into kind of music and actually like physically playing guitar was. Can you?
Yeah. I mean, I personally, like, I just don't think it's like, it was very, I guess it's mine. So I guess it's like, of course it seems obvious and normal to me, but anyway, it's like nothing sexy. It's not like I was in a car accident and then this angel with a guitar on her back pulled me out of, you know what I mean? It's like, or my dad was a famous musician. It's like I was just like a kid with like a lot of creative energy and like a supportive family. So like they just really, I have to commend them for like, you know, wanting to support me whenever I like showed an interest in certain things. And like, even if it was something that they were like, this is going to be annoying or Jesus, really, we're going here.
Sure.
So that was like, I mean, I, as like a little kid, learned how to play the piano, had like piano lessons with like a mean old lady teacher. And then,
what was her name?
Oh, yeah. Mrs. Hammond. I swear to God, because the movie The Witches came out. Yeah. The movie The Witches had just come out, and I was like, she's a witch, for sure. I thought, I had a real conspiracy theory going with my brother about that. I was like, did you see that painting in her living room? I think it's the painting from the movie.
Oh, no.
Were you scared
to go over there?
Oh, so scared. We would have to go together because it was so fucking scary. And she would hit us if we like made mistakes, which I know is so whack and like would not happen now. Whoa. But I also feel like it's like, and then we like told our parents about it and they were like, you just don't want to take these lessons anymore. I was like, no, it is not about that. It is. This lady is mean.
What are we talking like little slap to the wrist?
No, like at the back of the head. Whoa. Like, you know what I mean?
Hammond.
Like she was Hammond. Take it easy.
Whoa. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Where was this? Where did you go? Cause now I'm imagining something from like a Tim Burton movie where you grew up. This witch piano player.
This was in Battle Creek, Michigan. So yeah, we would like ride our bikes there together and like, actually a lot of like, my brother and I are very close. And I feel like when you have to go through something that's like not cool and you have like a buddy, it's like a very strong bonding thing for the two of you or three of you or however many, you know, this, you're in a band, anything terrible that has happened just brings your band closer together.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, we now we have that. Anyway, it wasn't
the universal talking point, like the thing you can always talk about. Yeah.
Remember this time? So piano. And then like, I got into like, you know, the elementary school music program and I was like, oh, the trumpet, I like that. That's loud and obnoxious. And like,
nice.
Did that. And then, And then I found this like toy guitar in our basement in the crawl space when I was like 12 and didn't know it was a toy and was like, sick, a guitar. You know, I'd never seen a real one in my life, so I didn't know that it was like a piece of garbage. Right. And I had a friend at school named Sarah Wilson who could play the guitar, and I told her, I was like, hey, cool, good news. Because I was like reading Spin Magazine, you know what I mean?
Okay, so you're already starting to get into music by then?
Yeah, I mean, it was like whatever I could get, which was, you know, limited. This is pre-internet, and I know there's like a lot of people who like to be like, I was born punk, and I always had good taste, and I never, you know, but it's like I was listening to like grunge music because that's what had guitars and was a little loud that I could get to. And I like wanted to be Courtney Love, which I remember saying this out loud and my mom laughing so hard, like, don't ever say that to me again. In hindsight, she's right.
Yeah, that's that thing. I'm like, yeah. 10 years ago, I would have been like, your mom's a square. Now that my parent, I'm like,
I should probably call her after this and just like clarify that it was just that she had a band. Yeah, right. I just wanted to have a band, Mom.
I just want to wear those cool dresses. It's not about
I don't want a dead husband and like a drug situation.
Right. And I don't want to raise my baby on heroin.
Yeah. A controversial person, PR presence. Anyway, none of that. Thank you. So my friend came over and was like, hey, I hate to tell you this, but this is not a real guitar. And you should come to my house and I will show you how to play a real guitar. And so I did that and it was very cool. And then I kind of tried to like tune it up and use it. And like, I like painted it in a way that I thought was cool, but I, thinking back now, no, looked like shit because I was like 12.
What was the vibe?
The vibe was early painting. It was like kind of basic colors, like straight out of the tube, but like in geometric like patterns. It was like a black and white line work motif and then some like shitty striping around the back and sides. Yeah, I mean, you know, I was a kid. I didn't know about Van Halen. RIP, I just made a cake that looks like the Eddie Van Halen guitar for my friend who has five Eddie Van Halen guitars.
The classic, the red with the white stripes?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Which I'm glad. I'm glad that I did that for him before he died because I feel like he would have just cried.
Brutal.
Anyway. Yeah, so I like my family was seeing me be interested in this and like trying to learn on this plastic thing, and then they got me this like Yamaha acoustic guitar, which I still have, and was very useful for like cathartic purposes and processing weird, confusing emotions as like a teenage person, and yeah, it's
great. Just like Hole.
Just like Courtney Love, my hero, which I'll say this, another time my mom laughed in my face when I told her I wanted to be somebody was like, I was like 4 years old and I said I wanted to be Tina Turner when I grew up. And she laughed so hard. Nice. She was like, I don't think that's going to happen.
She's like, you ain't got the arms, girl.
Yeah, like, or legs. We are just not very tall in this family. And
it's funny that stuff in hindsight. I even had thought when I had my son, I was like, oh, like Bonham could be a cool name, you know? I'm like, like that'd be a tight first name. And then I sat on it for like a couple days and I'm like, wait, asphyxiated on his own vomit in his late 20s. You know, I'm like, yeah, he's rad, but like, you know, maybe too rad. Like maybe you got to just set the standard a little lower. Like, I don't know if you're just like, if you're carving out their future a little too solidly with a name like that, you know?
I feel that way. And this is not that I'm judging anybody's choices, but I always do kind of, I feel like you're like hemming a child in if you give them like a very evocative name.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not really fair to like, cause then it's like, you're expecting them to like what you like. And, you know, I almost feel like there should be this chance when you are like 28, where it's like, would you like to, everyone, would you like to just change your name?
right? That's really true. Yeah. That's a good point. Did you ever think about that, Brad?
Yeah, no, I really wanted to name both of my kids, one of who was male, one is female. I wanted to name either one of them Strummer. And then I dwelled on it after my wife didn't let that happen. And I thought, they would grow up maybe, you know, like with kind of an attitude about the Clash or like punk rock if you force that on them. And then the other thing is like what you were saying is I'm a big advocate for give your kid like a really kind of normal first name and then a really rad middle name so that they can, if they want to rebel, you know, and later like...
Okay, so you give them the 28-year-old option B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like, they're going to do it either way, you know? Like, I mean...
Yeah.
I know my little sister has changed her name like 3 times. And
how old was she when she first did that?
She first did it like it was either right at the last year of high school or like when she went to college first year.
Sure.
She was Brenda. She changed it to Brenna. And then now she's actually Lily. She's changed it completely. Wow. So
that's some like Snoop Lion shit.
Yeah. So, but my kids have middle names of Barrett is Maeve, but I guess Barrett's a pretty cool name.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And then Oscar has Xavier with the X for the middle name.
Whoa.
So you have the option for the X-Man, which is great right off the bat. That's definitely where it would go. Yeah, it's really, I think the question is like, it would be rad if you had like the molecular scientist named Strummer. Like what a cool, well-rounded person, you know, who like loves the Clash and his name's Strummer, but like knows how to do that. But are they ever a molecular scientist right. if you name them that?
Right. Exactly.
You know, like chicken or the egg. Like does it carve their path too much?
At the end of the day, the real thing that really I think, because I saw it in so many other... It's so fucking indulgent and selfish. Like, it's basically parents going like, look how cool we are. We named our fucking kid like Pancake. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you make the whole kid about you.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. At the end of the day, it's just a selfish fucking, not that you should name your kid like, you know, Susan or Tom, but like, you know, like,
hey, you just alienated every Susan or Tom who may listen to our program. Those are fine names. Yeah.
I was thinking about, I don't know why I was thinking about this or have ever thought about it because I don't have children, but like I do, maybe it's because I have like a lot of friends that are trans and like that whole, like I have a friend who chose her name, which her name was a name that could be male or female originally. And then she had like made this like announcement that like, you know, I legally changed my name and it was like very exciting, but I was like, I thought you did change your name already because that name, you know what I mean? Like, and it's like a beautiful,
fit.
And then I thought about it more and I was like, maybe it's more about like, it's not about whether your name can pass for either gender. It's like about the fact that you're like reclaiming your existence. Yes. And then I thought,
yeah,
I think maybe everybody deserves the chance to do that because like, what if you have some whack name that like really you don't feel like fits you? And then I almost feel like with trans people doing this, it's like, in a way, I mean, I know there are people that are like threatened by people living their truth and like, that's sick and sad. And I hope those people find their way. But like, for me, it's like when I see somebody living their truth and like, living the life that they want and making the life that they want. It's like inspiring to like, you know what I mean? Like, what am I not looking at that I would like to change? And like, you know, totally. So maybe that's where it came from. But
I'm into this. I kind of second this amendment to like, to at some point, maybe 28's a little old.
Well, maybe I've seen too many,
25 or something. Let's say.
I had chosen when I was 25, I would have chosen something obnoxious that's like a little too sassy that like I can't back up now.
What do you think it would have been?
I don't know. Like some like Demonia. I mean, I wouldn't, but like, you know what I mean? Like something that's like, I would be bummed later when I'm like enjoying passing as like a totally normal person in public day to day. Like, you know.
If only bands had the same opportunity. Like, you don't think like, like U2 or like Pearl Jam or like one of these bands, like 12 years in would have been like, yo, can we please?
Well, actually now I feel like I read a lot of articles like since June about bands changing their names that they were like, what was it? The Drive-By Truckers changed their name to just DBT, I think.
Oh, really?
And like, yeah, because the founder was like writing about it. He's like, I didn't mean any offense by this. And he like really went into like what he meant, but he was like, but it's not about what I meant. It's like whether or not this is culturally insensitive and harmful now. And so that, to you know,
truckers?
I'm the drive-by part. Oh, was what he was like, this as a white guy, like,
I see,
you know what I mean? Like me using this phrase that like is loaded with all this, like,
it's actually a serious thing.
Yeah. And like, anyway, I just thought it was very cool. And I was like, yeah, right. You know, you can change anything kind of at any time if it's like, if it's yours to change. And like, I feel like a lot of stuff has changed in the last fucking what, 5 months, 4 months.
Oh yeah. It's a brave new world out there.
Yeah.
I even heard you say that in another interview where it was discussing kind of this idea, this conception people have, like, yo, just, you know, when we get this and we'll just get back to normal. And like, that's kind of not the idea, right? Like, it's like back to normal is kind of a waste of time at this point, and maybe even like a fool's errand, right?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit, yeah, like nostalgic, which like, wow, we're in this moment where so many things are changing, like to just like be crying for the way things were is like, seems so stupid. And especially like, because it's basically the same sentiment as like, make America great again, like really kind of knock the fucking sense back into people that are feeling nostalgic without question. You know what I mean? Right, like, do you know who you sound like right now? You might want to think again. Yeah. So. Yeah.
So what do you think, like in your mind, like best case scenario, what's the best landing spot?
Oh my gosh. Well, some way to like support or buoy businesses who are 100% dependent on things that are not possible right now that we should return to, like venues and bars. I don't know what it's like where you live, but in California, unless you serve food, you can't be open at a lessened capacity, which is
here. New York and New Jersey, the local bars and small venues are very much in trouble. Yeah.
So either we're going to have people come to their senses and believe in like community rather than individualism and like, be okay with like tax money supporting these businesses so that we can all fucking enjoy them soon, hopefully, which I don't necessarily have tons of faith in, or like there needs to be some type of like slackening for those businesses. So it's like, okay, well, let's say you pop a food truck in front, and then could we call this a restaurant and you can you know what I mean? Or,
That's a good idea.
I saw some friends in like the Netherlands posted that they had a show in this venue that was like, they had determined that 20% capacity was what was safe. And so they set it up for that and had a real show and sold tickets. And of course the tickets are more expensive, but like, you know, there's also, obviously there's like a bunch of streaming shows going on. And when you partner with a venue, then like the venue gets to raise a little bit of money too, like, we're trying to work with, there's like a beloved venue here that is like struggling, and we're just like, okay, the next thing we do, we really want to work with them and like make sure that they get some money and like, you know what I mean? So it's like fully symbiotic, and like people are aware that this is like, okay, so we're trying to pay for our studio space, but we also want to keep this venue alive. And, I don't know. The other thing is like, just maybe don't have a jackass that doesn't believe in science as the president of the United States so that we can move forward and like maybe work on like solving this instead of ignoring it and then denying it and then hiding from it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that could help. My head.
Can't hurt.
It might help a little.
Yeah.
All right. So just to tune back a little, we never kind of finished. And I was wondering, like, so we got to, you know, you learning how to play a real guitar. You know, you're in Michigan, which story adds up when you talked about the creepy witch teacher and then said the name of the town you were from. I was like, yeah, story adds up.
Have you been there?
No, I have no idea. It's just the sound. What was it? Battle Creek or something?
Battle Creek. It's where like Kellogg and Post are.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. Like right out of a...
Actually, it's also the sanitarium famous in the road to Wellville is about... Oh, early sanitariums and stuff. Yeah. That was in Battle Creek.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Wow.
Yeah, weird city.
Yeah, that is. Wasn't there... Oh, yeah. And wasn't there some... I kind of remember a tie to cereal, right?
Yeah.
And the road to Wellville. What was the connection there? I kind of remember just Matthew Broderick and cereal. Am I thinking of the right movie, right?
I believe it was the cornflakes were started as like this health food served at the sanitariums, but Kellogg is still there. And I think Post was there, but that was like the big, you know what I mean? All your friends, folks, somebody works for Kellogg or the automotive industry You know what I mean?
So. Sure, that was the driving thing. So what was the scene like there and how did you kind of get an entrance into... you know, more alternative music and thought and punk rock and all that?
Well, we moved from Battle Creek when I was like 13 and we moved to the other side of the state. So we lived in a place called Northville, which is like a suburb of the Metro Detroit ring. And so I would go, there's shows downtown in Detroit, and then, there's this little place called Pharaoh's Golden Cup, which technically is a coffee house, which I don't even think I realized until, I was, 10 years later. I was like, oh, the cup. Technically, it's a coffee house. But it was, a little place where they had all ages shows, and,
cool.
I would see, I saw, Good Riddance there, and, all, little local bands, there's the Shelter underneath Senators Hall. So those both places would have all ages shows. And then I left when I was 18. So I could kind of only get into all ages stuff. So it was pretty eclectic, I feel, because there wasn't enough density to the scene to have really thriving, specific, genre splitting, but then also this could have just been that I was a very young person and didn't have access to those more specific things. You'd go see a show and there would be a pop punk band and a rap metal band. You know what I mean? Where you're there's always one of these bands on these shows, a ska band and all in one night. You know what I mean?
I'm from New Jersey. We had the ska and rap metal mixed together.
Okay. I thought that was just me.
They did it all. It was oh my God, how is this System of a Down and Real Big Fish in the same band? This is insane.
I know. No, it's very and I think that might just be a young...
Yeah, you're just getting it together, you know?
Yeah. Why should I choose? I can have everything at once. And it's if you've ever been to one of those decorate your own frozen yogurt places, you know that is a recipe for disaster. You can't put it all on there. You're going to be fucking bummed out when it all melts and so... Just
too much, kids.
It's too much.
Just focus on your thing. Just do your thing. We can learn. I know that band, let's say Greta Van Vliet or something, you know?
Yes.
Take a lot of shit. But, you know, they chose their thing. They're doing
their thing.
It's smart.
Yeah.
Ran with it. So it seems like a lot of your entrance into this world happened after your hometown... you know, going to college and going to the West Coast and stuff. What was your first band?
My first band that really was anything. Also, I feel I just don't feel like I have a hometown. That's a weird thing where I when I talk to a lot of people who are I'm from here, and it's I grew up here and there, but I technically I've lived in Huntington Beach longer than anywhere I've lived in my life, and I don't really feel like it's my town.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. I grew up the same way. I don't have like a place that I'm like, yo, this would be, I'll say New Jersey.
Right.
But yeah, like I don't have like some, yeah, I never got a letter jacket, let's say.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. of life. Yeah. So the first time I got to like play with people in front of people was pretty randomly in this band called they're on AF Records, so it's called Introspect. And that also hilariously, when I met these guys and I didn't have any friends and they were super nice. They were like, my roommate worked at a guitar center and, so she made friends with these guys coming in to get some stuff. And then they came over to our house and like, we were all hanging out and they were like asking my roommate if she wanted to play keyboard in their band. She was like, no. For some reason she said no, which I think is fucking crazy. I still think it's crazy because she's a very good piano player. And I was like, I'll play your keyboards. You know what I mean? Like, right. I'm not doing anything. And they were like, okay.
Thanks to Mrs. Hammond, you knew what you were doing. Right.
Rotten hell, Mrs. Hammond. No, okay. Yeah.
It all comes full circle. Hammond's life teaches.
Yeah. Anyway, and then I was like, what kind of band is it? And they're like, oh, it's like old school punk and techno. And I laughed. I was like, hilarious. Okay. You guys are so funny. And they're like, no, really, it is.
That's cool.
And
like, I was like Devo style or something?
It's like crust punk with like electronic elements, which at the time was, we were again at this, like, this was 15 years ago, I think.
Sure.
And like maybe more, maybe it would have been like 2000, maybe three or four.
Okay.
And there was like that electronic elements were like cutting into a lot of different genres, but it was still like, it was still novel. And then I think most experimental things like that kind of died out, but like The Faint, you know what I mean? That was like, the band was like, anyway. So I do remember laughing and thinking they were joking. And then they gave me a CD and I was like, oh, you meant it. Oh, it sounds pretty cool. Like, you know, so, whoops. And then they were just like my buddies and my nice friends. And I remember I had this like a rotten, super controlling boyfriend that like just didn't, it's like he really wanted to like, he thought he was like making his own girlfriend. So he'd like tell me what to do and like what I couldn't do, and tried to like really criticize any choices I made on my own, to the point where it was like, I was just like, okay, so anytime I like am independent or autonomous in any way, I'm going to catch a ton of shit from you. And then, it was terrible. And I really, it's like, when I think about it, I'm like, who did that really happen to? Because I can't ever imagine myself now there, you know,
right, which is
cool. But I remembered,
That's wisdom, right?
Oh my God.
We only knew.
Yeah. And I told him, I was like, oh my gosh, good news. Like I'm in a band. And he like flipped out. Like, what do you mean you're in a band?
What?
And it was like, what? I'm in a band. Like, you know what I mean? Like I play music and you knew that about me. And like, you know what? I also don't have any friends. This is like great news for me. He was like, but obviously it was like bad news for him and his plans. And he flipped out and was just like tried to tell me that I can't. And I was like, whoa, we're done. Like, you know what I mean? This is just like, it opened my eyes to like how fucked up and whack our relationship had gotten under his like direction. And then I was really grateful because I got out of that and just got to kind of see how messed up it was. Like, and like, they were just like my buddies and I had friends finally, and I could like go out and do things that I wanted to do instead of like, I was in this place where I didn't know where anything was or what was going on. And so it was like, I'm like kind of under the thumb literally of this person who's like, this is cool and this is where we're going and that's stupid. And like, it was just like, oh my God, you're the worst.
But
so,
did he have what was his reasoning? Did he just not have any?
He had very, obviously he had like issues and was insecure.
Right.
But I think he just thought like his taste was the best. And like, I think he also thought that because he grew up out here and like I was from Michigan, and I think he thought it was like he could kind of make his own girlfriend out of this like soft moldable clay human. And it was you know, I'm a person with like dreams and beliefs and feelings, you know what I mean? Which like I saw in our relationship, like he did not recognize that. It was like, he just thought I was somebody that he could like push around.
But he didn't even have like a line to sell like, oh no, you can find a better band or like.
No, he said to me, and I'll never forget this because I'm very disturbed by people that don't believe in platonic relationships between people because A, it's heteronormative to assume that men and women can't be friends without wanting to have sex with each other.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, well, what about people that are non-binary or like not into heteronormative pairings? And like, you know what I mean? You're just, that's you. You're showing me something about yourself, actually. So he was like, I remembered him saying like, you're just going to be in this band with a bunch of dudes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's just not acceptable. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? Like, a lot of my friends are dudes. Like, and it's not a weird thing. Like, why are you, but it was just to control me. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I know this, you know,
that's pretty obvious.
Which I was, I was like, oh, okay. So, I mean, my roommates were a lesbian couple at the time too, which I was like, oh, well, you don't seem threatened by that. You know what I mean? Like,
classic, the classic trope there.
It's like, it's
ironic. The band was called Introspect.
They were great. I mean, I like was to have Thanksgiving at like Dave Small, is the kind of founder of the band, and he's got the coolest fucking parents. Like, his dad is like an astronomer and his mom was like an ex-nun, and she's this fucking hilarious, sassy, brilliant woman that's like just tons of fun. And like, oh my god, I loved it. I love those people. So
there's like no one I'd want to talk to religion about more than an ex-nun.
An ex-nun, you know?
That's cool.
Yeah, she's cool. So
that's awesome. That sounds like a good situation for you. I wanted to bring up something. I have a question for you. So Bad Cop's been around for what, like 11, 12 years at this point?
Actually, we're just coming up on 10 in January of 2011, but yeah.
And, you know, so a decade's a long time, and you have a very family type atmosphere in the way you present yourselves and make decisions. And just a lot of bands can't pull that off. So I wanted to ask you, what's your trick in like communication, or, you know, what have you guys done to curate it and to have that closeness and that longevity?
Well, thank you. First of all, that's very nice. It took work, and like, it's a relationship. But it's like a complicated polyamorous relationship because you know what I mean? And things got better and like really deliberately kind of on that track when, Stacy was getting sober. So we like things were going the way they were going for about 5 years. And then, Stacy got sober, and like there was like, you know, some trauma involved with that happening. And then when she was cleaned up, she just was very insistent that we like stay positive and like that there not be these like private, like unproductive things, like talking about another person just because you're upset, or like, like if you have an issue with a person, you should talk to that person and not the other people in your band, who will then just end up kind of stoking the fire and like building these like invisible rifts and like
eliminating any elephants in the room.
Right. And then also just like really like focusing on like honesty and like supporting one another, and like trusting one another. This all really had to be built up because like we had been operating as like a band that is here to party, you know what I mean, for like 5 years, and that was fun as fuck. But like, you know what I mean, it also is not good for a relationship. So
too many wild
then it,
cards.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And then like, you, even if you think you're like, I'm not the wild card, it's like, well, you're hungover and you're acting like a dick, you know? So you are the wild card today, friend. But, yeah, so we just, that really kind of, you know, and then we decided to like, okay, we're all, we all obviously care about this. Like, so always remember that even when you like are having a hard time and you think there's like some perceived issues with people, like, someone a long time, a friend of mine told me this phrase that I like remember and forget and remember and forget. And it, it's always really helpful, but like assuming rapport, which means like, don't assume that someone has a problem with you because then you have the, you have a problem. You know what I mean? Assume we have no problem and, and go from there. And it's kind of like a conflict resolution magic feather where like, you know, it's like, well, we're not going to have a fist fight if I'm not throwing any fists. Like, so there's
that's really just, wise. Like I need to take that in myself.
Oh my gosh. I find myself too, like, you know, you just get a little off track and like somebody's a dick to you and you like take it personally and get all burned up about it. And then it's like, all right, that person doesn't give a shit about how I feel right now. I need to just stop. I don't think it really was me, you know? And then that comes up too. Like people doing whack stuff to each other because they are just, because you're in the way, you know what I mean? It's not really a problem that they have with you. Like we had a, we had this thing. I'm trying to see if I can present this in a way that doesn't like overshare, but like there was this like incident where like a person got mad at the band for something and like went around and like individually contacted everyone in the band multiple times about it to the point where we were like, you know, we tried to communicate effectively. And if that means like the group chat's just going to confuse this, then somebody will be like, hey, is there a time today we can hop on a group FaceTime? I just want to clarify something. And it's annoying to text. And like, when are you guys available? You know what I mean? And so it's, that's been very helpful. So we did one of those and it was like, everyone was like, what's going on? This person is like telling me that they have this problem. And then when I talked to you, it sounded like it had been resolved. And then I hear from them again. And I was like, hey, I think what's going on is that this person has their own problem because we're all being really direct with each other and we're being direct with them about trying to solve it. And we've already addressed it. And this person just is not woke to our like practice of like putting fires out. And like when someone seems upset, just being like, what is it? What can I do for you? You know, like, they just wanted to be upset. And then other people in the band were like, well, I don't understand why they're so mad about this. I was like, I don't think it has anything to do with us. I think that we're just like the chosen conduit for this person, you know, like we're just a casualty. Like, so I vote that we not give a fuck about this anymore. And everybody's like, okay. You know, it's like,
it sounds very unifying. You need, it's like the idea that like humanity will come together if aliens attack us or something. You need like, you need the outside thing to bond you together like that.
Well, I did. I was like, while we're here talking about this, can we just appreciate that like this energy is so foreign to us at this point that it's literally like we're just concerned.
You know what I mean?
Remember us 5 years ago when everyone had a hangover and like something to be ashamed of in the morning? Like, you know what I mean? It was like very different.
Just like so many things, Metallica was ahead of their time by going to therapy on a documentary, you know?
My gosh. I used to dream about that for us. We were so like, I mean, so many things can be twisted up, but then that also gives me hope that it's like, look, if we can iron out a four-way family business marriage, you know, I believe we can change any system.
Like you said, it's one of the more difficult things to navigate, especially when, you know, when you're in a punk rock dynamic and there's no like sworn leader, you know, and you're trying to actually run like a little mini collective, like a little mini democracy. And that involves grown up and difficult styles of communication and conversation that just like some people aren't capable of.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Are there it's not that they're not capable of it. I think they just don't, they haven't thought about it.
Right.
You know, cause I know, I'm sure you've been like the very rational, sympathetic part of a conversation where the other person is like not ready to be productive and they just are still throwing punches and
sure.
doing some gaslighting and stuff. And you're Definitely. Just like, okay, well,
yeah.
I'm going to go, you know, I hope you figure out how to talk to people, you know, your life will get better if you do.
Yeah. Often, I mean, I've learned in my own communications that so often, like if you just sit there and listen and nod in a sort of unjudgmental way for 10 minutes, a lot of times people just kind of come to it on their own.
Yeah.
You right. know, they start hearing themselves and they start hearing themselves say it and they see a person looking at them with like an openness that they don't actually want to attack what you're saying. And then you start to kind of second guess it yourself. You're like, that kind of sounds crazy.
Yeah,
it does work. But I mean, it's a good thing in a way. So because you guys ran into another thing that really challenged that, which was Stacey being diagnosed with cancer, right? During your production of the last record.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that didn't challenge the band, like, interpersonal anything. That was just like, whoa, you need to, like, let's look at this, you know?
Yeah, so what was that? Like, were you, like, in the middle of writing, or were you done writing at that point? Like, how did the chronology of that line up for you guys?
It was in December of 2018.
Oh, okay.
And we were... Let's see, we were just kind of getting started with getting really going on the record. Okay. We worked with Mike, Fat Mike, and like he's so busy and like has so many of his own projects, and we were on tour and he was on tour, and so it was like very, very drawn out. We had started demoing in like January of 2018, but then like, you know, I felt like we weren't really digging in. Yeah, it was like, it was very sporadic. And anyway, Stacey had been writing a lot all year. Like she really hit her stride and like was thriving. And then this was like a really crazy development, I think, especially considering like how she was like finally like, she's like getting into yoga and like cooking and like all the things that you're supposed to do to take good care of yourself. And like, but then as part of that, you know what I mean, paying attention to her body, she like found a lump and went to the doctor and like, which is like, it's good that she was doing those things and like kind of had like already like
5 years prior, that could have taken a lot longer, right?
It never would have been found, you know, really never. And I guess the lump had been there for 8 years or something, growing for 8 years, which is like, you know, so it really was that sort of like getting on track where you, so it wasn't, I think some people and maybe Stacey, hopefully not, but could have probably thought of this as like a, like what I'm doing everything right. And now this, and it's like, well, it had been there and you're doing everything right. And finding it was the right thing too, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
So that was like a very, you know, we were just like, okay, you do what you need to do and we'll be here, you know, like there. But she, I would say, is the most, puts the gas on the band the most out of all of us, you know, like everybody wants this and wants this to thrive and wants the best for the band. But Stacey is usually the one that's like, all right, let's do this. Like, you know what I mean? If you're I don't know if I can do that, she'll be the one to get you on the phone and be like, it's a really good opportunity. I think you should think about it. And it's I am, but like, so,
Everybody needs one. You need one.
Right. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And sometimes it's like, stop it, get off me. But then you're right. You know? Yeah. So our agent is Brian Gorsiker from, Nightbirds, and he's amazing. And I remember at one point he called me and was like, is this cool? Like Stacey's telling me to keep booking things, but I want to like make sure she's handled. I was like, if she told you to go for it, you should go for it because like, you know what I mean? She's driving. Thank you for being a wonderful person that cares, you know, sure. but like if she says to book this tour, book it. Like,
yeah.
Sure. You know, so, and I remember she, we like, I mean, it's funny and amazing in hindsight because she's okay, but like it was, there was like, she had had this like lumpectomy, and then like 5 days later we were on a plane to Europe, and she was like, my doctor got mad at me because I told her I was going to Europe at the end of the week. Yeah. I was like, yeah, you're not exactly taking it easy, like, you know, like, so
that's fucking rock and roll. So 5 days after the operation she split, and was it, what was it like, festivals or like what was it?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what we were doing. We were so busy that year. It was like, we went to Europe a couple times, and I can't even remember. It's so crazy that the pace at which everything had been happening until 6 months ago was insane.
Sure. Well, that's rad. So, that's rad she kept going like that. Now, do you hear it like lyrically and in, are there any songs on The Ride, like your last record, that are kind of encapsulating that experience at all, or did was that more just something that you guys don't really want to talk through your music about?
Oh no. Okay, so first of all, there's an amazing, Stacey wrote the coolest song ever called Breathless, and it's about her experience the like anxiety and fear and like you know, there's a lot of also with health stuff and with mental health stuff, there's like a weird like guilt and shame that we attach to this, you know, so she just kind of goes through that.
Well, like people viewing it as weakness or something like that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're like mad at your body for letting you down know what I mean? Like, oh no, cancer, which in our lifetimes has gotten less stigmatized. You know, do you watch The Midnight Gospel, or are you into Duncan Trussell?
I do like Duncan Trussell. Yeah, I'm a pretty avid listener of Trussell.
Yeah, like his interview with Anne Lamott, which also became an episode of Midnight Gospel. Like she talks about that, like her cancer in the 70s was like, we don't talk about it. You know what I mean? And now it's like, it's better. It's like less stigmatized than it used to be. But there is that, like, you know, even just anytime I personally get sick, I'm like, my stupid body let me down. And it's like, don't be like that, you know, it's not your fault. Anyway, she really got into like she's a great songwriter and a brilliant lyricist. I mean, the way she talks kind of around things, like she's like a fast little boxer kind of, like she doesn't I'm like, what the fuck? You said this, but you didn't say it, but you know, I just really admire her in so many ways. But yeah, she wrote a very cool song about that called Breathless that we're hoping, we were like, this should be the first single. And then like the pandemic happened and it was like, maybe we should get a little lighter for the first single. We'll come back to it, you know, but anyway. And then, you know, a lot of the record, this happened about halfway through us making it, you know what I mean? And she was dealing with it and going through treatment and, you know, we're still touring and she said scary things to me a couple times where it was like, Jenny, if something happens and I die, like just promise me you'll get these songs out. And it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I hope that you don't die, you know, like, of course we will, like, you know, and I think it also sort of motivated her further to like, write. She wrote so much over the last like couple years, you know what I mean? And it was like, at times it's like, I'm jealous, dude. You're just like pooping out amazing stuff because you're like, you know, she was like on fire and motivated by like the mortality of, or potential mortality of this, which I think is like one of the beautiful things about things not being perfect is that like they will inspire you and they, and you know, like right now things are not perfect, but like people are making changes and looking at things and, you know, it is a balance. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So what's next? I know the record only came out in June, but, are you already writing, looking to the future, or are you just waiting for an opportunity to actually tour on this record?
Right now we're trying to like make use of the new, kind of developments in like ways to perform. And obviously we're hoping to tour again, but like that timeline seems to be moving ever farther into the future, you know? But also everybody, I think, really is a little bit privately enjoying the break, because it was like, this is the only thing that can happen kind of for the last few years.
Isn't that weird? I had a conversation with another musician on text, like just a few days ago, where they expressed to me that, like, they're like, yo, I don't give a shit about not playing shows. And I was like, oh my God, thank God you said it.
Yeah.
I've felt this for like most of this time. I miss so much about playing music. I miss sitting down in a room with people and writing songs like desperately, you know what I mean? That hurts. But the idea of like loading up my shit and going somewhere and setting it up, playing for a while and sweating.
Yeah.
And like just breaking it down, going back and doing that. Like right now, I'm like, I've done that like 2,000-3,000 times in my life, you know? Like I kind of dig this, you know? Yeah. It is like a nice little sabbatical.
I am glad that you said that too, because I desperately wanted a break. Yeah. And like, it was like, you know, I just knew it was like, this is unhealthy. You know what I mean? Right. Like I don't like being unhealthy. And I felt sort of trapped.
Yeah.
And I know that saying that, like, there's definitely people that are like, you're ungrateful, but it's like, I am simultaneously grateful and felt trapped. I promise you.
Anyone who says that's ungrateful, like, simply has just not toured a lot.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like, I love this. Trust me. And it's amazing that it can happen. And that's why I was, am still here. And like, you know, but at the same time, like, I don't need to, it didn't feel sustainable. And maybe it's because I'm probably 10 years older than where I should ideally be for living in a van and eating out of paper bags. You know what I mean? You know, it's just, so
it
just,
gets a little less romantic by the year. It really does.
Yeah. It's just, so I'm glad. And I have such a cute dog. You know what I mean? Like, I get to like be home with her and like, I just, there was a lot of things that I wasn't able to do because that was like taking up so much of the time and space and energy. And like the fact that it's not happening is like coming outside after a movie during the day, kind of, where you're like, it was so dark and loud in there. And then you're like, it's 3 p.m. and no one's in the parking lot and there's no noise. And, you know, it's very, very cool.
Yeah. But, yeah. When you're used to something, you unexpectedly find yourself with all that time. That's nice. Well, speaking of the time, I'm sure you have been able to focus on your art a little bit more. I had a lot of questions to ask you about your art, but we went off track about other things like Miss Hammond and baking and whatnot. But I got to say, I was looking through your sculpture stuff and I love the boxes of death.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's like such a rad concept and so cool. So I wanted to quickly ask about like where your head's at when you're creating those, and are you actually like trying to convey any thoughts you have about like death or the body or the way it transposes after you die? Because it seemed really interesting the way you were setting those up.
Yeah, well, thank you. So that show is actually, I don't know if they're still doing it, but it was like a series of shows put on by some people out of the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
Where they, I think they had like a super custom build out company. I'm sorry. Oh, Electric Coffin. I think that's the name of their company.
Okay.
And they like came up with this amazing model where they like constructed these coffins and then mailed them out to artists, and then you ship them back, and then they would like exhibit them around the country and I think maybe the world. And so I like got referred. They worked with a woman named Tori Cook, who I love, who used to run a cool gallery that was in Laguna Beach. And so she was like, she kind of tipped them on to like a couple of artists that she works with, and that I was one of them. And when I got the box, I just wanted to, like, I kind of anticipated, like, a lot of, like, skeletons and, like, right, you know, right, death and goth stuff. And I was like, okay. And I always try with art stuff to go to zig when people would zag, just because, right, like, I don't think I would do it better than everybody else. So, like, my safest strategy is, like, what is something that maybe somebody else isn't going to do? And I was, like, one of those, I was like, I just watched the Carl Sagan Cosmos series like 100 times in a row because it's literally the greatest
thing
ever made.
That's so funny you say. I just started like binging old Carl Sagan YouTubes. They're so cool.
That series is, I think, is my favorite bit of any film to anything. You know what I mean? Like, the animations are so, he's so inspiring and, like, you know, so I just was like, I felt very, like, it's very spiritual, like, sure, but also scientific, which I don't believe those things are mutually exclusive. And I just think, like, my favorite thing about Carl Sagan is that he is a spiritual scientist, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
And that the fact that, like, the reality of, like, living is death and, like, it is a cycle, and the fact that, like, everything here, and unfortunately this includes plastic, that, like, exists will always be here and in some form or another. And, like, to me, that felt like, you know, eternal life, like, know, and sure. So I wanted to, like, make a maybe more positive, spiritual interpretation of this, like, box, which when I think of a coffin, like, automatically I'm like, dead body in it, putting it in the ground, you know what I mean? Like, the end, sadness, you know, morbidity, like, so I just wanted to, like, I think that really came out one of the times in my life when I made something that came out almost exactly how I wanted it to. Like, yes. And then I did another one for them the next year that, like, I just really like anatomical models, for a couple of reasons. Like, they're fucking cool looking, and, like, they were some of the first 3D sculptures that I encountered as, like, a child, and I always thought they were cool. And, like, I also love that it's, like, all of humanity, you know what I mean? There's no, there's not, like, oftentimes, like, a face or a head or the skin is not shown in, so it's, like, kind of universal. So I like that. And I like the reality combined with the symbology of, like, certain organs and body parts, like hearts and brains and lungs, and, like, you know what I mean? I think I'm not alone in that, that's like, anyway.
Super cool. I'm literally staring at a spine right now that hangs in my house. So I'm,
really?
Yeah, it's because of my wife. She's into creepier stuff than I am. If it was up to her, this place would look like fucking Ozzy Osbourne's house.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. I definitely.
We were joking. We were watching Beetlejuice the other night and saying that essentially we're just those extremes. Like, I'm like the guy trying to, like, look at mallards with his binoculars and, like, leave my office made of pine alone, you know? And she's like, I need to sculpt my art and just, like, you know, and make everything black with, like, candelabras everywhere and stuff. But somewhere in the middle we meet, and it works. But awesome. Well, thanks so much. I didn't realize we've been going for so long. I appreciate you taking the time and having fun with me and Brad.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me on your wonderful podcast. This was very fun.
Good.
Awesome.
I'm glad. I'm going to go fucking eat some sweets now.
Good. Get that ice cream cake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm on it. Chocolate crunchies. That was awesome.
So fun.
Now I want ice cream cake.
Carvel?
Apparently it's an anomaly to everybody. I had no idea. Like, she even asked, this is literally just ice cream in a circle. And I'm like, that's an ice cream cake.
It's an East Coast thing. And I don't even know that. I think it's almost it might even be kind of a tri-state thing.
Wow. I never knew.
I'm trying to remember.
I mean, I guess, come to think of it, I haven't had a lot of ice cream cake out there on the road and stuff, you know?
But,
so,
like, there is, the classy non-Carvel ice cream cake actually has cake in it.
Right. You
it's
were
like
saying.
Half cake and half ice cream. That's
I mean, that sounds preferred. Delicious.
Dude, I'll down me some Carvel any day of the week. In fact, yeah. we just had a Carvel cake here last week. Ugh. And it was so good. Yeah, the little, it was strawberry crunchies, though. It was a strawberry.
Classy.
Oh, yeah, I can get down on those things, man.
Well, I would love to go to Jenny's house for those fresh baked chocolate chip cookies that come right out of the freezer. And then you get to just like review beautiful art, have a good conversation. She's like the best host ever.
Oh, yeah.
But everyone needs to check out the new Bad Cop record, The Ride, which rules. And then Jenny Cotterill. I think I'm saying it right. It's like when people say my name, Benny Horowitz.
Horowitz?
I'm like, do you see a fucking umlaut over the O? You know? But I think I'm saying it right. Jenny Cotterill, that's her name on Instagram. That's her name on Twitter. And then JennyCotterill.com has all the, you know, the art stuff, the sculpture, all her different events and speaking that she does. Very interesting person.
Oh,
someone I walked away from the interview going like, I'm going to keep my eye out and always check out what she does. Really impressed with her art, especially like I was saying, she did that series, The Death Boxes, which are just so cool. It's like this strange mix of like, it's like three-dimensional Frida Kahlo. It's like bizarre. It's and really cool and dark. And I told my wife about it. She was like, holy shit, this is awesome. Right up her alley. So really cool stuff. Everyone should check it out.
Yeah, and check out the Bad Cop socials, which is Bad Cop, Bad Cop on Instagram, BCBC Music on Twitter.
Yeah, good group.
Oh, yeah. Check out and definitely check out their music wherever you find it.
Wherever you find it. Maybe in a McDonald's Happy Meal.
And if you're loving on us and want to support us.
Yeah.
Go to patreon.com/goingofftrack.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see what the deal is. You can become a patron. You can join the team. You can be part of our gang, man. And we'll have some secret stuff. And guess what, Benny?
What?
I was still recording that little bit at the end there where you were talking about lingerie.
Oh, is that right?
So it didn't appear. I didn't get it. It's not in the main episode, but I do have kind of a lo-fi version of it that will be available to our patrons.
People don't know how skilled of a lingerie man I am.
Yeah, well, our patrons are going to find out.
I don't even wear it. I tried to. I did. I did what a lot of kids... I tried. My mom was at work. I put some stuff on.
What about when you were pitching, you used to wear women's underwear, I thought.
Well, that's just for good luck. Yeah. I was like, I don't think I look good.
In lingerie?
Like, yeah. I'm like, I don't like the look here.
Yeah, no, I think the smoking jacket is the way to go for you.
Yeah, for me. I know.
That's what I would prefer personally. I'm just saying. If we were gonna hang out somewhere like in public, I'd rather you had the smoking jacket than maybe like, you know,
well, when we're going to hang out in public, I'll make sure to give you a text first and ask you what you would like me in, because that would be really appropriate, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Brad, CN45, any thoughts on what you want me to wear?
Not the red two-piece.
I'm like, it's raining out. I can't wear the ascot. Brad, let me ask you a quick question before we leave.
Okay. Yes.
I just spent a lot of time before we did this sorting recycling. Do the people who pick it up spend the same amount of time sorting that recycling?
Don't
or
ask.
Does it go straight into trash somewhere?
Benny, there's a saying that people like you and I should live by because it may bury us.
The tone of your voice is scaring me. Go on.
Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. This whole recycling thing, I'm going to fucking sort my recycling because I want to believe that somewhere it's getting done. And you know what? If we all do that, it'll work, right? It's all
it's
you just got to do your part. Everybody do your part.
It's very optimistic.
You got to do it, man.
Thank you. I will continue to.
I live in a big apartment building. And, you know, we have a space downstairs where everybody takes their like paper recycling. And, like, I always break down every single fucking box because...
Oh, yeah.
My maintenance guys are going to end up doing it anyway if I don't do it. So I do my part. Everybody do your fucking part.
Very optimistic. And I appreciate your optimism, Brad.
And well, it
this
also
is nice.
It also, at the very least, just gives me righteousness to fucking bitch about it,
and an excuse to have a box cutter in your pocket.
Oh yeah,
I appreciate this optimism. Someone I was speaking to the other day. Oh, we could talk about it because it was a nice thing. Friend of the program, Brian Fallon.
Oh yeah,
we're having a conversation. And we talk about old Donald having coronavirus, and I'm being a little negative, you know, talking about how I think this is going to play out. Usually with, you know, the world on fire,
right?
And Brian's like, you know what? I thought maybe he would go the way of like, I'm ruining the story because I can't remember his name. A Christmas Carol, who sees the three ghosts?
Oh, Scrooge.
Yeah, Scrooge. He's like, I think he might go the way of Scrooge, where he's given, like, you know, all the images of the future and he comes out a changed man. And I'm like, holy shit, that didn't even occur to me. And I was like, I don't think this is going to happen, but it's something you have no control over. And I appreciate the optimism. Even the fact that his brain went there meant he's a more pure soul than I am, you know? Because I didn't even imagine that could happen.
It would be nice. It would be nice if we could.
What if he came out
optimistic?
A golden goose for America. Here's healthcare. Here's a golden goose for everyone.
I want to believe it's going to happen, Benny.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, let's end up on that upbeat note. Everything is okay, everybody.
Yes,
and it's only going to get better.
Recycling.
Woohoo! Yeah. Tune in next week.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thanks a lot, Jenny. Fantastic.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.